From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you've been with us all week long. This hour, we'll be joined by Arthur Lee, one of the great entrepreneurs in this country, founder of LifeBack. This is National Choking Awareness Day, so we want to have him on to talk about that. Big supporter of the show as well. A lot of things going on today. There's going to be, Kristi Noem is going to be in Colombia having a big meeting with the foreign minister. Actually, he's going to be in Mexico City because she's going to convince them and thank them for all they're doing at the border. Also, she met yesterday in Colombia to tell them you better take your people back and thanks for helping us out at the Darien Pass. We'll also have a chance to keep you up to date on all the things happening from the White House. The president's going to leave for Florida at about 2 p.m. So before we go any further, let's get to the big three.
Number three.
And then we get a budget deal that Chuck Schumer helped design, and he had no plan for his own budget bill. And so the base has said, enough. Like, we want change.
That's Dan Torrentine on Primetime last night, talking about the Dems just don't get it. More proof they are rudderless. And what's scarier is they don't seem to know it.
Number two.
Homeland Security, the FBI, ICE, and lots of folks from the U.S. Attorney's Office. We went to work, and they brought down one of the top MS-13 operatives in America.
Yeah, that happened yesterday morning. A massive push on multiple fronts to get rid of out of our nation ungrateful migrants, both legal and illegal, whether in college or they're trying to create havoc. We will tell you the latest.
Number one.
This is a revolution, and I think it might be the biggest revolution in government since the original revolution. America is going to be in much better shape. Critical programs that people depend upon will work. It's going to be a fantastic future.
Doge speak. Yep, the men behind the movement to make the government more efficient speak up on Fox. And the conversation, riveting. Dems should be embarrassed that they are fighting against this effort because you can't find politics anywhere. With me in studio, Rachel Campos Duffy, who can't get enough of me. I mean, Monday you start your week 3 hours. And then what just happened now? Fox and Friends? You must really like me.
I do. I just follow you.
It's amazing.
The show ended, and I just followed behind you
amazing.
Made my way up to your studio.
Right. So, Rachel, great to see you. The number one story is the Doge story last night. All that seven guys and Elon Musk. Yeah, he's always giving interviews. But my takeaway, these are seven pros. Have no political. I have no idea what they care about politically. They care about numbers, systems, and organizations.
Yeah, it's really incredible that Donald Trump, and you have to give credit to Donald Trump, really. I mean, this is a guy who's a leader, a businessman, and said, yeah, we're going to bring in the best, the brightest, the smartest minds. We've got rocket scientists on this panel that Brett Baer had. And, you know, all of these guys saying, we're just going to help make the system work better. They talked about using government equivalent to going into the Apple store, streamlining everything, getting rid of the fraud, the waste, the abuse. You heard Elon Musk there, Brian, saying, this is a revolution. It's like 1776. And I just think about, like, when my husband Sean was thinking about, do I want to leave, you know, my cushy job like you have, Brian, here at Fox.
That's one way to describe it.
Do I want to leave my job?
He was on the bottom line.
Yeah, he was on the bottom line. And do I want to leave? The opportunity to do something revolutionary, which is, I mean, this cabinet, the Doge, all of this stuff is so remarkable. Government has never functioned like this. They're using systems that were in place in 1950. They're pushing paperwork through carts in mines. You know, they're at the FAA, you heard Sean tell you, you know, they're using floppy disks. So this is an opportunity to really bring government into the modern age and actually get rid of the fraud, waste, and abuse for real, not just write about it and publish a book about it like all these senators do.
So Aram Mogadishu is a Doge engineer. He's got a rich background, extremely wealthy, and he is focusing on Social Security.
Yeah.
And listen to what he found. Cut 12.
The two improvements that we're trying to make to Social Security are helping people that legitimately get benefits, protect them from fraud that they experience every day on a routine basis, and also make the experience better. And I'll give you one example is at Social Security, one of the first things we learned is that they get phone calls every day of people trying to change direct deposit information. So when you want to change your bank account, you can call Social Security. We learned 40% of the phone calls that they get are from fraudsters.
40%?
That's right. Almost half.
So they're trying to get you to direct deposit into their account, not Mr. and Mrs. Johnson's account, who's 76 years old, and wondering, wondering why the check isn't showing up. Then they got to call Social Security and try to get it back.
Yeah. And there's also people who are 130 years old who are getting checks, supposedly. Think about all the trillions of dollars that went out, like the billions of dollars that went out during COVID. There was so much fraud going on there. So, yes, these systems are so antiquated that they are an opening for anyone who wants to rip the government off there. And like you said, some of the fraudsters are here in the States, but some of them are foreign countries.
Yeah, here's more from what else he found in terms of how old the system is. And the other problem is the computers don't talk to each other.
Yeah.
So a small business loan, it's about to go through. If they were talking to Social Security, they'd realize the loan's about to go to a 9-month-old. Total fraud. But they don't have the ability because they're 60 years old. Cut 13.
I'll say the first thing that got me really excited about Doge was learning basically the state of government computers. By some estimates, government IT costs about $100 billion, and it's funding systems that are over 50 years old, in the case of something like Social Security or the IRS. So really critical systems are old. They cost a lot of money to maintain, and they can be the efforts to improve them are often very delayed. So I thought I'm a software engineer that maybe can make a difference here, and that's really what inspired me at a high level.
So does he sound like a political operative out to destroy people in the name of Donald Trump?
You know, everyone who I've talked to that's in my husband's department has said everything you thought was wrong and antiquated and inefficient about government is 1,000 times worse than you actually think. You know, even with some of these systems that Sean is seeing, they're saying it costs more to maintain the system, this ancient system, than it is to operate the system.
Or replace it.
You should just replace it. But nobody wants to go through that. And people make money also on contracts fixing this system because we have systems running on floppy disks.
Crazy.
Until Elon Musk came, the president couldn't send one email out to every government employee. That's something that Elon Musk said we got to fix right away.
He did right away too,
He did it like this.
Yeah.
But the point is,
and he made that offer, you can leave.
Yeah, exactly. why did it take this? How many, administrations kept just papering over this problem?
Well,
and then
he's
finally taking charge of it. And as you said today, they want to burn up his cars as a result.
Yeah,
the Teslas.
As your husband is Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy, what did he say Doge has done within his organization since he took over? Have they helped? Are they working in conjunction? Are they communicative?
Yes, they're working together. I mean, first of all, they're providing really good advice on what to do about the FAA system, the air traffic control system.
Yeah.
So they're providing advice there. They're finding inefficiencies, all kinds of stuff. You know, one of the things that Sean did that I thought was really interesting, this is they were charging people to park in the parking lot that the government owns. And the reason was because I guess Pete Buttigieg and the liberals wanted people to take public transportation. So they wanted to penalize people for parking, for driving. And Sean's like, no, we're not going to do that. If you want to drive, it's a free country. And this building is owned by the government. We shouldn't be charging
that clown put on his little bike helmet and hopped on his bike, was able to get there.
And pretended because he was actually... He actually drove in the vehicle that Sean drives because they're on Secret Service. Yeah, he put the bike in the back of the SUV, and then he drove to a certain point where the cameras were waiting, and then he took his bike out of the SUV.
Such a clown.
And then drove. It's clown world.
It is. It's crazy. And just that whole sense of penalizing people because they don't have an electric car or whatever.
Yes.
We see the congestion pricing in New York City, and now we see the hypocrisy of it all because the number one electric car maker in the entire country, Tesla, the most successful electric car ever, and who made their own power stations, not depending on the government because Joe Biden made 9, and this guy put the whole country, filled the whole country with them. They're blowing them all up and putting graffiti on everywhere. So that's how much that means. I think we finally broke the green fever, I hope. DEI fever is smashed, I hope. Back in a moment, because I'm going to play some cuts that we did not play on television today. what the Democrats are doing and what they think they learned from the last election.
Okay.
Don't move.
Increasing your intelligence quotient.
What the hell did you just say?
It's Brian Kilmeade.
It is time to take the quiz.
It's five questions in less than 5 minutes. We ask people on the streets of New York City to play along. Let's see how you do.
Take the quiz every day at thequiz.fox. Then come back here to see how you did.
Thank you for taking the quiz.
A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Between the fertilization and all of the other things that we're talking about, it's going to be great. We're joined today. Fertilization. I'm still very proud of it. I don't care. I'll be known as the fertilization president. That's okay. That's not bad. I've been called much worse. Actually, I like it, right? I like it.
So, President Rachel Campos-Duffy here. Rachel, I think he's referring to making in vitro affordable.
Right. So he says he's the fertilization president. I thought I should be the labor secretary. What do you think?
Because you were always in labor for like 10 years. That would have been great.
But I was actually in the White House when he gave those remarks, and the whole room just erupted.
Do you think he knew what he said?
No, I think he was like, why is everyone laughing? And then he figured out what happened. He was like, you know what? I'll take it. I've been called worse things than the fertilization president.
So I want to bring you to something of the Democrats. The question is, when the House passed that CR, it just threw everybody off. They never thought Republicans who just kicked out their speaker were going to kick, you know, going to be able to get it together, right? So people are learning, like, how do we handle the Republicans? What do we do? There's the DEI. What do we do about women in sports? What's our messaging going to be? So Tim Walz thinks he knows. Cut 34.
We let them define the issue on DEI, and we let them define what woke is. We got ourselves in this mess because we weren't bold enough to stand up and say, you damn right we're proud of these policies. We're going to put them in, and we're going to execute them.
Okay.
Yeah, this is...
You think
he
learned anything?
Yeah, this is a man who...
Tim Walz.
Yeah, who doesn't understand what's happening. He is in a liberal bubble, and his idea is, we lost because we didn't tell them enough how woke we are. Like, it's so dumb. He just doesn't get it. You know, there was a really great article. I think I sent it to you, Brian, while we were on the show today. It was in the New York Times. It was on FoxNews.com. But a New York Times columnist...
Ezra Klein?
Yes, Ezra Klein was talking about what he thought went wrong. And I thought his assessment was actually pretty sober and pretty honest. And what he says is, like, you say you want to, you're for, say, high-speed rail. We're for high-speed rail, and we're going to get all this money to high-speed rail. And then you don't actually build the rail, right?
And he's saying it to Gavin Newsom, too.
Right, and again, because why? Regulations. Liberal environmental regulations or whatever they are slow things down. So you say you have all these great things you want to do with government, but you have all these regulations on top of it. That means people never see the product of your work. Now, listen, maybe you think there should be high-speed rail. Maybe you don't. I don't know what people's positions are. But if you say you're going to do something and you don't accomplish it because at the same time you're putting in place all these regulations, no wonder people are pissed off at you. And no wonder people will look to somebody else. Now, on the woke stuff, I mean, it's just common sense. It's just common sense. Why would people want boys in girls' sports when we fought so hard to get girls their own sports and have them compete? So I think they're just, you know, who's for transgender surgery being paid by the American government in Guatemala? No one except a very, very small fraction of people.
So I think it all is full circle with the PBS NPR president. Yeah. When she comes out and says, you know, I'm reading this book and it's how bad white people are. We got to pay reparations. That's what woke is.
Yeah.
Woke is realizing how bad you are and how much you should apologize. And if you think about it, it goes back to President Barack Obama's first overseas trip. Let me just tell everybody, and by the way, let's make sure the terrorist organization from the Muslim Brotherhood is in attendance, that we apologize for 170 years of imperialism. Really? We're apologizing for what?
You know, he said he wanted to fundamentally transform the country, and he really almost did it. And, you know, it's not over till it's over, but I do think that the woke mind virus is breaking, that there was sort of like a fever that came over everybody. I mean, I still remember back in, you know, 2020, you couldn't even talk about, you know, I did, you did, but people in polite society felt scared to say, I don't think it's a good idea to mutilate children's, before the age of 18. That was sort of controversial. It's no longer controversial.
And now you're looking at Gavin Newsom saying, what are you doing? You are fighting not to inform parents that their kid wants to transition? That's what you're fighting for?
Yeah.
Good luck with that.
Yeah.
I mean, until something switches in a blue neighborhood, a blue state like that, though, I would love to see a legitimate Republican have a run in California, because all those people that backed those blue causes got burned to the ground, and they're trying desperately to rebuild their homes. But these environmental regulations
are
stopping the construction of their homes. These are the people you put in office. The tragically inept Karen Bass, who didn't deserve it.
Yeah.
What was her thing? A failed congresswoman?
She was a communist, actually. She actually went down to Cuba.
Fidel Castro.
Yeah, she went down to Cuba as a young woman and worked down there and was a proud Marxist. So you remember when Donald Trump went down to L.A. and the people couldn't even get to their properties to see what kind of damage. And he was like, let the people get to their property. It's their property. Let them go see what happened to their homes. They need to assess it.
In real time. He did it at a press conference in front of the press.
That, I think, was, towards your point, what will happen in California? I think it was really powerful for Donald Trump to do that. And also, Brian, when L.A. burned down, all the footage came back of Donald Trump predicting that this would happen because of their stupid environmental regulations when it came to managing their forests, which is exactly, it came to fruition. And so I think people, when they're down and out, when their home is burnt down, and they see what leadership looks like versus Karen Bass, I think it made a big difference.
I want you to hear what the other thing Democrats are doing is cursing like crazy. They think it's like blue collar, cut 30.
And to see this administration claiming that it cares about competence and merit, and then be responsible for an epic like this.
What I repeat is that on the day that the person that should have been president had to deliver her concession speech, I didn't know it was going to be this bad.
When they go low, we go high, he can go.
Yeah.
I mean, what is this? I mean, if an eighth grader was saying this, I'd go, you better grow up and watch it. If I find your teachers telling you this, you're going to be in a lot of trouble. Instead, these guys, that's what they think the voters want.
I think it reveals a lot of frustration. Look, they had a really good game going. They could use our tax dollars. I mean, listen, people like you and I, half of our salary is gone to Uncle Sam, next month.
Absolutely.
So they were able to take our money and funnel it into NGOs that would, one, spread their ideology, and keep their activists paid with our money. This was a great deal for them. It was total money laundering. And we saw it. We got our first peek of it. Because I remember I would go down to the border, Brian, and I would talk to, the sheriffs, and they would say, hey, look at the NGOs. Look at the NGOs. And now we know what the NGOs were doing.
6 to 10, Saturday and Sunday, Fox and Friends and...
Yes.
Noticias.
And Noticias every day at 4 p.m. Go to fox.com or noticias.com. Noticias.com.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
It might be more than 300 at this point. We do it every day. Every time I find one of these lunatics, I take away their visa.
You're saying it could be more than 300?
Sure, either. I hope. At some point, I hope we run out because we've gotten rid of all of them. But we're looking every day for these lunatics that are tearing things up.
I do too. And I just love that Marco Rubio is leading the charge to understand these pro-Palestinian, pro-Hamas protests that take over buildings and harass Jews as they try to go to class from UCLA to Uptown New York, right here in Columbia. I think it's got to stop, and I think it's scaring the hell out of everybody, from the provosts and the presidents of these colleges to the illegal immigrants to the visa holders themselves. Especially when you go and grab Mahmoud Khalil, and you take a guy who's 31 years old and a leader of the pro-Palestinian, pro-Hamas movement, whose group was handing out Sinwar posters as if he's some hero and Nasrallah flyers as if he's some hero. These are terrorist leaders of terrorist organizations, Hamas and Hezbollah combined, both dead, thankfully. And they're signing them as figures of inspiration. when once he was kicked out, they really got the message that their things have changed. Here's more from Marco Rubio, Cut 28.
The people that we're getting rid of in our country are vandalizing. They're not protesters. They're taking over college campuses. They're harassing fellow students. We let them in our country to study. We gave them a visa because they said, I want to go to your university. I want to get a degree. They didn't say, I want to go to university and I want to vandalize your library and I want to chase Jewish students down the street and I want to wear a mask over my face like if it's Halloween and terrorize people. We didn't give them a visa to do any of that.
That is so true. But they did it, and they feel impervious to being tossed out because they felt so protected on these schools. Number one, we have to revisit who we're bringing here. I'm tired of the kid in Indiana who's valedictorian of his class not being able to get into every or any Ivy League school. And then it turns out you got seven kids from Syria coming or from Gaza. Look, you want to put some of those people in, not at the cost of an American kid that wants to come here. And you know these foundations pay for the whole thing, so they get full freight. That has so much to do with it. And you got to examine the foreign countries who are donating to these schools. They want something out of it. And in turn, they do get it. They get their students in there and they get a say in their curriculum. So a Russian scientist working at Harvard was detained by ICE yesterday. We're monitoring the situation, according to some. Kasina Petrova has an attorney. She was detained, according to that attorney, at Boston's Logan Airport after a trip to Paris. He says the CBP at Logan Airport overstepped their authority when they revoked her visa. He says she was bringing back frog embryos. But there's another accusation there that she was working against our country and for her country. Petrova is currently being held at Richmond Detention Center in Louisiana and has an immigration court hearing May 7th in Jena, Louisiana. Our visa cancellation is followed through. We're kicking them out. We don't keep them hostage like Vladimir Putin does with our people. But we grab them, we kick them out, and we realize they're using their time here to work against America. One more cut from Marco Rubio, cut 29.
We don't want those people in our country. They're not demonstrating for. They're going beyond demonstration. They are going and they're creating a ruckus. They are creating riots basically on campus, and it's unfair for students. Some of these schools are some of the most expensive schools we have in America. People pay a lot of money to go to these schools. They borrow money to go to these schools, and you can't even go to class because some lunatic who's covering their face is running through campus, spray painting things, harassing people, and they're in my country as a guest. We want them out. Every one of them I find, we're going to kick them out.
And all of it. Now, look, I saw that Jeff Lacks column over the weekend that says Columbia agreed in principle to all nine demands from the Trump administration in order to get their $400 million grant back that was revoked. After the anti-Semitism was not cracked down on. In fact, they seem to be supporting it. So it turns out on Saturday, she had a 75-minute call with concerned faculty members and members of the school council, at which time she says, don't worry about it. You're still in control of your curriculum. Don't worry about it. We have a provost. You'll still decide the content of these courses. One of the nine demands was that you turn over the curriculum. Right, you take it from the faculty and you put it to a provost or the president, and we'd oversee it. Now, people might think that's inflicting on freedom of speech. Not when it's anti-Americanism, it's Middle East and Far East studies, and what you're putting out is radicals to cause unrest in our country. I have no problem with that. And if you're in a green card, if you're on a student visa, you do not have the rights of an American citizen. You want to protest? Maybe you want to protest what's in the cafeteria. You maybe want to go up to your dean and say, I wish there could be more courses like this. That's normal. That's what students do. But to shut down a school, to put a mask on, hand out kifkas, whatever they are, and put it over your face, and then chase Jewish students around the campus, and then protest their existence, and in UCLA, you say, you're Jewish, I see a Star of David, you can't go to class. That's absolutely insane. Now, I thought it was insane 2 years ago. But now we have a president that says it's stopping. Now, think about the ripple effect. Same thing with the border. You start flying people into an El Salvador prison, they stop taking the risk of being a gotaway at our border, number one. They're flying out another 120 today, right now, back to their respective countries. Good. Next, you have to say, in college, I applied for a visa. I'm a 28-year-old, air quotes, freshman, and I'm trying to go to Harvard, but where I can foment unrest and join other anti-Israel, pro-Palestinian groups. Let me ask you, is it worth it? Because if we catch you, you're going to end up, number one, you're not going to get a visa if you're honest. And if you lie and we see you doing this, you're going to end up in a detention center in Louisiana and be sent right home. You want to waste the best years of your life in a detention center in Louisiana? Go ahead. Take the risk of coming to an American college. I am all for losing some international student revenue. Maybe some schools got to collapse because they've been making their living on international students who get their government to pay for them, full tuition. I don't care. It doesn't bother me at all because I think this has to be cracked down on. That's why one of the themes on Sunday night at 10 o'clock is going to be the crackdown that President Trump is doing everywhere, but especially here. And if there's a hearing and Khalil is allowed to stay a little bit longer, that's still, he's going through hell right now because he's putting Jewish students through hell because he's rude, him and his organization, abusing cops with disparaging statements I won't even relay to you. But now the message is you're going to go through the court system, you're going to cost us some money, but a precedent will be set, and now you're going to be jettisoned right out. My sense is a lot of people are self-deporting. A lot of criminals, MS-13 and others, are saying, I got to get out of here, number one. Number two, others saying, I'm not going to try to get into here. I just saw a stat this morning that the traffic at the Darien Pass, once thought to be impassable, now it's plowed ground, pretty sadly, is down 99% since Trump took office. That is flat out unbelievable. Down 99%. And Rubio's pulling their visas out. And he says that there's a lot of people that we haven't even seen yet that were pulled out. I think about Tufts College, where they took a PhD student who was en route to, I think, a coffee shop to waste some more time when she was pulled aside by ICE officials. And they said, look, you're violating your student visa. We know the organizations that you're fomenting some unrest in. We know your anti-Semitic attitude, perhaps links to Hamas. You're coming with me. And now they're taken away. And I love it. Some people are protesting for them. I want to see who they are, too. Most of all, I want to see enforced on campus. And I want to see it in New York State. I want to see it in your state. Get rid of the masks. Stop. Show a little bit of courage. You're standing up to somebody or somebody. Take your mask off. No more walking around with masks. We got used to that during the pandemic. I never did it. I would never do it. I got in trouble for not doing it. You probably didn't do it. They're wearing them in El Salvador in prison, by the way. That's interesting. But I'll tell you what, all these people, the ones that cause the most trouble, covering their face. There's a documentary coming out. And guess who voices it over? It's about the unrest on campuses last year. It's called Encampments. It's put together by some rapper. And he is, instead of having it out later on in June, they're rushing to get it out today. It was actually seen yesterday in Copenhagen. Guess who does the voiceover for Encampments? Mahmoud Khalil. That will not help his case. When we come back, we recognize National Choking Day with the person that makes sure that somebody in your family does not pass away. One of the great entrepreneurs in America, LifeVec founder Arthur Lee. He's going to be in studio. You're listening to The Brian Kilmeade Show. Don't move.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade. If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Welcome back in studio. It's Arthur Lee, good friend of the show, LifeVec founder, one of the great entrepreneurs in America. All dressed up. Great to see him because it's National Choking Awareness Day. And if Arthur has his way, no one will ever choke to death again because he is creator of the LifeVec. Arthur, welcome.
Hey, thank you, Brian. I don't know. I really appreciate it.
We see you all over TV, and now you're using people with the Ring doorbell. Have an opportunity to, you have a chance to see the real dramatic situations where you see the LifeVec in restaurants, you see it in backyards. What's been the response been since you started adding that to your commercials?
Well, that's been huge. I mean, the first one that went viral got 80 million views. It was a mom saved her child out in the backyard. It was very painful to some extent. You hear her screaming, but she saved her child.
Right.
And that huge Choking Awareness Day raised a huge amount of awareness. And now, you know, we've saved, we're coming up on 4,000 lives saved.
Wow. How big, this is all American manufactured.
Right? Yeah.
So how much, what goes into it to making this? how many different vendors do you have to use in order to make
it? Well, no, we make it all ourselves. It's injection molded right in Brentwood, and then we bring it over, and our guys put it together. You know, there's a quality to it. This is life and death.
Right.
And, you know,
you make one bad.
That ain't happening. You remember my dad. He was an engineer, space program. I made it last forever. I made it cover adults and children. Use it, I give you a free one. I did everything humanly possible, because if it expired, that's what the business world told me, particularly early on. They said, oh, you got to make it expire and triple the price. Not doing that. I'm only here once. Well, I got no second game here, so let's just do it right.
Yeah, because if it expires, you'll have to buy more.
Wow, that's
I love that life hack, but it expired. I got to get a new one.
Well, the big play is in the schools and institution. Then they got to buy one every year. So there's money coming back to the people that miraculously get money in this world.
So where are you making the greatest progress? I know right away the Nassau County Police Department.
Well, they've saved a bunch. You saved one today. I just told you, you're at 31 saves from your voice and Fox's voice. But the biggest progress is the American Red Cross. So they finally came around, 13 years of doing this, 9 peer-reviewed journals, almost 4,000 saved, 2,366 kids. They now recommend use of an anti-choking device if protocol fails or cannot be done. Wheelchairs, obese, big people, et cetera. There's a lot of cases where it cannot be done, and then LIFAC can be used.
And also, I remember when George H.W. Bush, 41, he had Parkinson's. And what happens is you lose your choking reflex. You use ability, peristalsis, to be able to swallow. And they were so worried about him swallowing, I thought to myself, man, imagine if they had a LIFAC there just in case.
Well, in the Godwink world, the guy, the 31st of the Brian saves, Parkinson's.
Oh, Parkinson's. Yeah. Wow. So Mike Rowe, you came on with him. Right?
Yeah.
He loves your story. He wrote a song, I understand, for you. So let's listen to it.
He's so
It's no joke when you choke. So get life back and live. Without breath, there'll be death. So get life back and live. Get life back and live. Get life back.
Life back and live. Life back and live.
Are you kidding me? That is fantastic.
I know.
Did he like produce that in a studio?
Yeah, it's actually right now. There's a video. Him and Chuck are doing a video, and he's, you know, they're both going. Chuck's playing with the life hack, and Mike's doing the dude.
So is that going to be in a commercial?
It's that out has on to be. Social right now.
But I mean, I can't. That's got to be like, what is it? Cars for Kids? I mean, that's
exactly.
You know how you can't get that out of your
head? I know. Trust me. We sing that all the time. Running around the offices, we're singing the micro. You know,
can't get it out of your head.
Yeah.
So I just
did a TikTok to it, Mike.
You know, Arthur, you tell me, but I mean, that seems to be a no-brainer. How hard, when people start talking about manufacturing in America, would it have been easier for you to manufacture elsewhere and save money? I know you don't want to do that.
No. Here's the thing. People I don't think realize, particularly in the medical world, when you make it in China, the best thing you get is no liability. You could do anything. You could say anything. You don't have to worry about the FDA, the FCC. You could just do whatever you want. So the biggest advantage isn't the labor. It's the fact that you can ignore every single regulation and rule that I have to follow. But I'm American. I'll make it here, and I'll deal with it, and I make a good product, so I'm not worried about it. But that's the big reason you want to make it over there.
So wait a second. So the FDA does not regulate anything coming from another country?
Oh, they do, but it's very difficult to enforce it. Patent doesn't exist. Just bypass it. What am I going to do? Sue China?
Well, the only thing that could get their attention is a ban.
Yeah.
We've had a certain amount of complaints. We're banned until further notice. So you can go explain what's going on here.
Yeah.
Have they indicated they'd be willing to do that with new people in charge?
Well, we can hope. We fight. But, you know, it's like the problem is with Amazon, you don't have to be here anymore. The old days, even if you were a knockoff, it had to exist here. Right. So now you just go China, right to Amazon. You don't exist. You say whatever you want. Any ramifications, you got to try and go get them in China. So there's no presence here. And that's the problem why it's so prevalent. And 50-something% of Amazon sellers are now Chinese. 70% of new sellers are Chinese.
So on Amazon. And a lot of times they're trying to knock off your product.
Tons of them. Hundreds of them.
How do we know what's yours and what isn't?
The best way is lifevac.net, and you come to our website. On Amazon, you just got to be careful. You'll see if it says lifevac.net, if it's lifevac and you see the logo, it should be us.
What about the patent? The patent doesn't matter internationally?
Well, not only does it not matter because they just send it in, and I would have to go to them. The U.S. Patent Office was kind enough to give a duplicate patent to a Chinese company of my patent. So now I'm suing the patent office.
How would a tariff affect Amazon? Would it affect Amazon?
Yeah, it could. I think, Mr. Wonderful Guy, he talks about it, and he's got some points on, yeah. But I think it's got to be, you pick the products that we could make. We should never make a medical product outside the United States. End of story, doesn't matter. And if you sell on Amazon, you should have to have a presence here, a responsible presence. I don't care if it's a P.O. box, but if you want to litigate or you need responsibility, because if you're in China, the FCC, oh, we can't do anything. We can't get them. FDA, well, they're in China. It's hard to enforce. Then I get enforced.
And it's got to be, it's not just Arthur Lee with LifeVac that has these problems. I'm sure every American has got these issues.
It is, and I think maybe there's a bigger God-wink picture that I'm getting hit with because it's medical. This is not, a Gucci bag, which is horrible too. But this is life and death. These products fall apart, Brian.
Yeah.
They break, they fall apart. There's one, the valves and the handle is going to kill someone.
Crazy. Arthur Lee's here. It's National Choking Awareness Day. So Elizabeth Hausbaugh had a book out. After our segment's done, she sees LifeVac in the studio, which I tell everybody it's in the studio. And she says, oh, they're the best. I have 7 of them wherever I go. And I said, why? She said, because I almost choked to death as a kid.
Yeah.
And Elizabeth Hausbaugh from The View and Fox News and everything. So she is your biggest fan. And I think it's about time. Ben Carson is now signed on.
Yeah, he's a
What does that mean to you?
The world. I mean, what a man. He's such a soulful, gentle genius, and what a good heart, but brings a ton of credibility, right? I mean, we have 9 peer reviews, saved, documented 3,700 plus lives, but this is another step of credibility. This is the way to end the school deaths, the veteran deaths. I mean, Ricky and CJ were just down in Florida meeting with the veterans.
CJ Douglas and Rick Thatcher.
Yeah, we have to, they don't have a chance.
LifeVac.net. BAC. LifeVac.net. Thanks, Arthur. Congratulations.
You're the best. Thanks, Bri.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest minutes of the Brian Kilmeade Show. I come to you from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan. Heard around the country, around the world. Keep in mind, too, getting set for Sunday night's big show, 10 o'clock, One Nation. Make sure you watch Fox News Channel. It's going to be exciting. So will this hour be exciting. Jeff Lax, a Cooney Law professor at Kingsborough Community College and founder of Safe Campus, which advocates for Zionist Jews who are discriminated against and excluded on college campuses. Do you realize anti-Semitism has gone up 500% over the last 2 years? Sickening. Ambassador Kurt Volker standing by, former Ambassador NATO, distinguished fellow at the Center for European Policy Analysis. But before we get to the ambassador, let's get to the big three.
Number three.
And then we get a budget deal that Chuck Schumer helped design, and he had no plan for his own budget bill. And so the base has said, enough. We want change.
Yep, Dan Torrentine, Democratic strategist. Dems don't get it. More proof that they are rudderless. And what's scarier for the party is they don't know it.
Number two.
Homeland Security, the FBI, ICE, and lots of folks from the U.S. Attorney's Office. We went to work, and they brought down one of the top MS-13 operatives in America.
Governor Glenn Youngkin. Massive push on multiple fronts to rid our nation of ungrateful migrants, both legal and illegal. From college campuses to the back roads of America, we will tell you the latest.
Number one.
This is a revolution, and I think it might be the biggest revolution in government since the original revolution. America is going to be in much better shape. Critical programs that people depend upon will work. It's going to be a fantastic future.
Well, the DOGE people speak. The men behind the movement to make the government more efficient spoke out on Fox last night. The conversation was riveting and informing and enlightening. Dems should be embarrassed that they're fighting against this effort. And for those willing, they should come in and watch these men. And I imagine some women, I just haven't seen them yet, in action. And what they've done, we had 2 billionaires there, 3 if you count Elon Musk, talking about how they've been asked and basically enlisted to help out. And that's what they're doing. And I want to get to that shortly. Also, this week has been a week in which both the Ukrainians and Russians are being pushed and prodded to get to the peace table. And they've agreed in principle to lay off each other's infrastructure and then the Black Sea. At what cost would it take for even a 30-day ceasefire? Kurt Volker, he joins us now. Kurt, your thoughts about where we're at right now in Ukraine.
Well, I think we're making some progress. There's a lot of talk now about a partial ceasefire, which is good. I can see where President Trump is trying to drive this. So you have a ceasefire. You have Ukraine signing a minerals deal with us, so they agree to pay us back. So they're paying their own way in the future. And you get Europeans to put together a deterrence force so that Putin doesn't attack again. This seems like a pretty good structure. Right now, however, I'm a little concerned that Putin feels like he doesn't feel much pressure himself to agree to a ceasefire. He keeps laying on demands. You know, he wants to get everything up front and not just agree to stop the fighting. And just overnight, they had substantial attacks in the Odessa region on the coast, Black Sea-oriented attacks, because he sees that, you know, maybe we're going to have a Black Sea ceasefire, so let's get in the hits now.
Yeah, not caring how distrustful and not looking worried about a confidence measure and having no confidence in it. General H.R. McMaster has seen enough. Cut 52.
It's probably time to stop the serial gullibility, recognize who you're dealing with. What Putin respects, what he responds to, is power. You know, and actually, he won't stop until he is stopped. The good news for us, I think, is he's in a position, thanks to his really bad decision-making, you know, the invasion re-invasion of Ukraine in 2022, you know, he's broken his economy. And, you know, Martha, in the last year, Russia has taken 40 to 45% of the total casualties in the war. That's not sustainable. So I think we are in a real position of strength, we being the United States and Europe, if we come together on this again, and Putin is in a position of weakness.
And we do know, too, that he's gotten 3,000 new North Korean soldiers to fight for him. Is H.R. McMaster on the money?
He is. But we shouldn't underestimate the degree to which Putin is willing to throw his own people into death. He's going to recruit. He's going to send soldiers in. They're going to get killed, and he's just going to keep at it. They've got three times the population of the Ukrainians, so they are going to keep at it. And he can get aid from North Korea artillery. You know, two-thirds of the artillery they're using is from North Korea anyway. They're getting drones from Iran. So they can do a lot of destruction. But he's absolutely right that Putin knows his economy is in a weak position. He's going to run into payments and state budget issues by the end of the year if he keeps this up. And that should give some leverage to the Trump administration to demand that he stop now, that he not continue these attacks. And we've seen him feel that things are going to be handed to him, and so he doesn't have to give anything at the negotiating table. That's what we have to change the dynamic on. He has to know that this is only going to, as President Trump said in a tweet, it's only going to get worse for him if he keeps this up. And we should be making that threat very clear.
And right now, I agree with you. So you go out and you say, we're going to do confidence measures. Forget about the history. If your goal is to stop the fighting, do it. Okay, do it. And now if you're going to continue to make Trump look bad, he was asked, I think a couple of days ago, they say, could Vladimir Putin just be delaying you and just putting this whole thing off? He said he might be. As if to say, do I have to? Do I have to let you know that the sanctions you're going to feel? Do I have to let you know the amount of arms that Ukraine is going to go? And almost have to say, do I have to go that side?
That's right. No, I think that's exactly what Trump is doing. He's trying to give Putin a way forward where everybody can call this a success in whatever way. And remember his tweet, I think it was on his first day as president. He said, we can do this the easy way or we can do this the hard way. And Putin seems to be choosing the hard way, and that means we've got to get harder.
You know, if he is being street smart, there's so much more upside to not being enemies with us. Even though, that's, you know, right, you could be as diabolical as you want, but if you stop the fighting where it is right now, and a sustainable peace, 4 years, Trump will put him back on the SWIFT system. He'll talk to him a degree of unfreezing some of their funds if that'll get him to peace. But I'm wondering how much guile he actually has, how much he's able to read what he could possibly do from his perspective. Let's see.
Yeah. My view, Brian, is that he's taken that for granted. He looks at the way the Trump administration has engaged so far and says, I can get away with it. And that's why we need to show a bit more stick to say, look, this is coming if you don't play ball.
And I tell you, Zelensky's been playing it smart, too, since then. He went to the Daily Mail and said, I kind of blew it at the White House. I had a heavyweight belt I was going to give him. Instead, I showed the pictures. I think that ticked him off. So one thing leads to another. That's it. I just want you to hear what Dan Hoffman said about Vladimir Putin. And here's what he's trying to do still. Cut 53. He's former CIA Moscow station chief.
Vladimir Putin will say one thing for media consumption. That's a lot of lies and obfuscation, and it's what he's been doing since he was in the KGB decades ago. And then his army will carry on these attacks because his strategic objective, Brian, continues to be to topple the government of Ukraine, install a puppet regime, and concurrently try to drive a wedge between the United States and Ukraine and between the United States and our European NATO partners.
All right, I guess we're going to see, right?
Yep. No, Dan is spot on. One thing we need to remember about when Vladimir Putin speaks, Dan said he lies all the time, which is true. It's more than that, though. He is very strategic about saying what he wants to say to influence our behavior. So we need to read into that. We need to listen to what he's saying, not for what he's saying, but why is he saying it? What is he trying to get at? What is he worried about? And we need to be smart about what we push on, because ultimately, as HR said, we are in a stronger position. We need to be able to use that.
So Ambassador Volker, our guest. Ambassador, so we see with the conversation that went on with the Signal chat, famously released, the writer, the editor of The Atlantic got it. But one of the exchanges was between the vice president and principals of the Secretary of Defense, as well as the National Security Advisor, basically saying, Europe's getting a free pass. We only have 3% of our commerce that goes through the Suez Canal, 40% of Russia, of the Europeans. Why are we bailing them out? It is contradictory to what the president's foreign policy said it is. How does that play in Europe?
It creates, you know, a big frustration in Europe. I don't know how to say it. Like, first off, the numbers are wrong. Shipping is mixed. Trade is mixed. This is a tax on international shipping and freedom of navigation. These are attacks that the Houthis launch missiles at Israel. They have hit American ships. And so I think President Trump is exactly right. We are not going to stand by and let a ragtag terrorist group disrupt global shipping. This is something, you know, we're just not going to do that. And we have the capability to take this out quickly. And this is not really about Europe at all. I think the vice president's wrong on that. This is about the United States and Israel and pushing back on Iran, which is funding all of this.
Yeah, I just think the anti-European attitude, I could understand if the ultimate goal is get them to pay for their defense, everybody wins and Russia loses. Yeah. But you got to do it without alienating them. To rebalance it, I can do it. But the public, even though that was never meant to be public, is pretty much what J.D. Vance said at the Munich conference.
It is. It is. And, you know, he didn't link letting people hit Europe to his pushback on Europe. So you guys have to do more for your own defense. There was a difference there at Munich. But here he's saying that we should let the Houthis attack international shipping, attack European shipping, attack their interests. Just because. That doesn't make any sense in my view. And it, as you say, it alienates Europe, because if you think what Trump is trying to do, Trump is trying to get Putin to stop fighting. He's trying to get Ukraine to pay its own way. And he's trying to get Europe to put up the forces and the funding necessary to provide European security so this doesn't happen again. That's not a bad strategy. But if we piss off the Europeans that much, we're going to have a much harder time getting where President Trump actually wants to go.
Lastly, this, I'm sure you got so much to look at, but in the Gaza territories, the Palestinian people were protesting Hamas for 2 straight days. They have never done that I could tell, sustainably. And we know Hamas had a lot of their commanders just taken out in the latest offensive. How should we read this?
What I take from the fact that they were willing to go out and protest against Hamas is the fear factor has been diminished. I think these recent attacks on Hamas leadership have given people a little hope that maybe there's something other than Israeli attacks and Hamas leadership. Maybe there's some other way. So I take that with some encouragement. I also think that all of the effort the administration is putting in to Saudi Arabia and working to get Saudi Arabia and Israel back on the same page, that will be transformative for the Middle East. I think there's a real possibility there.
Yeah, let's see. We'll see where this goes. Ambassador Kurt Volker, always exciting time. The world is an intriguing place. Thanks for unwinding it for us.
It is. Thanks, Brian.
You got it. Back in a moment. Brian Kilmeade Show. Bottom of the hour, Jeff Lacks, inside the rage, the raging increase of anti-Semitism, and finally, a president that wants to tackle it.
It's Brian Kilmeade. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Do you believe that America is addicted to white supremacy?
I believe that I tweeted that, and I, as I've said earlier, I believe much of my thinking has evolved over the last half decade.
Do you believe that America believes in black plunder and white democracy?
I don't believe that, sir.
You tweeted that in reference to a book you were reading at the time, apparently, The Case for Reparations.
I don't think I've ever read that book, sir.
You tweeted about it. You said you took a day off to fully read The Case for Reparations. You put that on Twitter in January of 2020.
Apologies, I don't recall that I did.
You don't remember taking off from work to read a book? And the book was so important you tweeted about it? That's some of the embarrassment of the president of PBS and NPR went through as we went over why the Republicans are saying we should not be funding this. This is a partisan organization that is no longer a need for. Let them pay their own way. And just be honest, you're a left-wing organization. I mean, the numbers were overwhelming, and it was really brought out. And I think Democrats' approach was to bring up children's programming and talk about the dangers of Elmo and put your tongue firmly in your cheek and how the Big Bird wants to say this. By the way, they have left PBS. They're now on HBO. It's interesting. I don't know if people know that, but child programming behind a paywall. But some of the give and take with Catherine Mayer, who's also on those TED Talks, who's supposedly an inspirational figure. There's some more give and take here with Brandon Gill. I want you to hear this. Cut 39.
Do you believe that white people inherently feel superior to other races?
I do not.
You don't? You tweeted something to that effect. You said, I grew up feeling superior. Ha, how white of me. Why did you tweet that?
I think I was probably reflecting on what it was to grow up in an environment where I had lots of advantages.
Do you think that white people should pay reparations?
I have never said that, sir.
Yes, you did. You said it in January of 2020. You tweeted, yes, the North, yes, all of us, yes, America, yes, our original collective sin and unpaid debt, yes, reparations, yes, on this day.
I don't believe that was a reference to fiscal reparations, sir.
What kind of reparations was it a reference to?
I think it was just a reference to the idea that we all owe much to the people who came before us.
That's a bizarre way to frame what you tweeted.
How great was that? I mean, Brandon Gill's delivery, I guess he's a young guy, 28 or 38, they were saying. But his delivery and his preparation was conversational. But her answers were so detrimental to her credibility. Pat Fallon went at it too of Texas, cut 40.
You believe your reporters are fair? You said they're fair and they're working at it.
I believe that they work and to be every day, sir.
The recent registration, when it was looked at, 87 Democrats and zero Republicans registered.
I found that very concerning.
Shouldn't be surprising when their own CEO says things like, I'm so done with late-stage capitalism, or calls the president of the United States a deranged racist sociopath, or that America's addicted to white supremacy. I understand why Democrats on this committee are going to viciously and vehemently defend you all, because you become a propaganda wing of the Democratic Party.
It's just a knockout blow. She has nothing to say except for I've changed. And no one believes that. Cut 41.
I do want to say that NPR acknowledges that we were mistaken in failing to cover the Hunter Biden laptop story more aggressively and sooner.
It's unfortunate that NPR ignored the Hunter Biden laptop story. But y'all did talk quite a bit about the debunked Russia collusion. Do you know how many times NPR interviewed Adam Schiff about
Congressman, I would love to say that we actually believe we made a mistake on the Hunter Biden laptop story.
But the amount of times Adam Schiff was almost every day they were having this conversation. The other big news that happened yesterday is Elise Stefanik of New York was asked to go back and take her congressional seat because even though she passed through committee as the ambassador to the United Nations, just needed a floor vote that would have won her direction, the The Republicans can't afford to lose that seat. And if they put it up for a special election, they'll be vacant until then. And then it would be a struggle to keep it. There's no one like her. So therefore, she is doing something extraordinary. Even though she's 9/10 of the way through the confirmation process, she's going back. Cut 47.
It really came to a culmination today, but it was a combination of the New York corruption that we're seeing under Kathy Hochul, special elections, and the House margin. And look, I've been in a House. It's tough to count these votes every day, and we are going to continue to defy the political prognosticators and deliver victory on behalf of President Trump and, importantly, the voters across this country.
My sense is they're able to hold the House. Even if they don't, she's going to join the administration. If she, then you'll have to decide, do I want to be without a seat? If Trump loses and a Republican doesn't retain her, if the Republicans lose. So she'll have a career decision to make, but man, she is formidable. No one doubts it. She took one for the team, no question. There's going to be a big special election on Tuesday for the Walz seat and the Gates seat, neither of which will be easy.
Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
You also know that the press secretary said that your husband circulated pro-Hamas flyers. Did he?
That's not true.
Is Mahmoud pro-Hamas?
These are accusations that the Trump administration keeps pushing on him.
But what do you say to those?
I think it's ridiculous. It's disgusting that's what they're resorting to, that's the tactic that they're using to make him look like this person that he's not. Literally, it's so simple. He just does not want his people to be murdered and killed. He doesn't want to see little kids' limbs being blown off, you know?
Well, that's the wife of Mahmoud Khalil. He fell to instant love, and within 9 months he was married after arriving here. It's amazing how that happens. Jeff Lax is in studio. He's a CUNY law professor at Kingsborough Community College, founder of Safe Campus, which advocates for Zionist Jews discriminated against and excluded on college campuses. Sadly, it's a huge story that's getting bigger, especially since the detainment of Khalil, who's now in Louisiana at an ICE prison. And then he'll be maybe in court today. But at some point, he's going to try to say that I'm just exercising free speech as a green card holder. I didn't do anything wrong. Jeff, is he right? Is he just being discriminated against because he's pro-Palestinian?
No, that commentary from his wife is expected. What's she going to say? This guy loves Hamas. This guy works for Hamas.
But she didn't come out and say he hates Hamas. She says it's ridiculous.
No,
it could mean anything. It means she could be saying put her under oath.
Yeah, what she said. You're right. She was very careful what she said. But look at his background. He worked for UNRWA. He worked for the Syrian government. He lied on his visa. I mean, his background is not exactly stellar.
Why did he get in? I mean, think about how many valedictorians around the country can't get into Columbia.
That's a great point. And they're being harmed. And look for what? For people like him.
There's a documentary coming out now put by Macklemore, the rapper, about, they call it encampments, the story of the encampments at Columbia. He narrates it. Khalil narrates it. That's not going to help his cause, is it? As he tries to tell everybody he's just a student trying to voice his concern.
No, I would like to know really how he got a document with Hamas's logo stamped on the document.
What do you mean?
He was distributing documents, according to the government, according to the Trump administration, that had Hamas's logo on the document, Hamas literature, Hamas propaganda on Columbia's campus. So if someone is not directly tied to Hamas, explain to me how they get a document like that.
That's true. Also, handing out pictures of Sinwar and Nasrallah.
Yeah.
You're doing that. What are you saying?
Right. You're saying you support Hamas.
What ties do you think they have to Hamas?
Meaning
the student groups that were in the middle of all this Barnard and Columbia unrest.
Oh, I've been saying this for years, Brian. We know that the foreign funding is a big factor here. We know that there are faculty members that are working with NGOs connected to terror organizations. On my campus, I've told you before, Anthony Alessandrini was raising money using public buildings to raise money for medical aid for Palestinians, which is tied to the PFLP. It's a front group.
I want you to hear some other people speaking out. Democratic Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib about Khalil's arrest.
Mahmoud's rights are our rights. In the United States of America, no matter your immigration status, no matter, again, who you are, you have constitutional rights in our country. The detention and threatened deportation of Mahmoud is illegal and is a direct assault on our constitutional rights to due process, freedom of speech, a right to protest, and on dissent itself.
You're a professor, is she right?
This is not freedom of speech, what he's doing. That's number one. Number two, the Supreme Court's going to ultimately decide the Aliens Enemies Act. It's going to happen. The judge was talking about it yesterday on The Five, and she's right. And I think that's going to be interesting. I don't understand this take that Democrats are putting out there, which is that this law is very old. That is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard in my entire life. If a law is good law, there are a lot of really old laws. Contract laws go back hundreds of years, even before America existed, and they're still good law. If a law is good, a law is good. By the way, if it would have been a bad law, Brian, it would have been overturned a long time ago.
So we're seeing not just Khalil. We're seeing other people being picked up and tossed out. A woman who's a Tufts College University PhD student was picked up on camera and is in Louisiana now, deportation facility, a nice facility. Harvard can confirm that Kasia Petrova, who was a research associate appointment at Harvard, they don't like her actions. They think they're anti-American. She's been picked up. And then we hear Marco Rubio come out, and he says that it's not just these high-profile ones. Got 27.
It might be more than 300 at this point. We do it every day. Every time I find one of these lunatics, I take away their visa.
You're saying it could be more than 300
sure,
visas?
Sure, I hope. At some point, I hope we run out because we've gotten rid of all of them. But we're looking every day for these lunatics that are tearing things up.
300. Do you believe that?
He sounds like me. I use lunatic about 10 times a day now right. When I'm talking about these people. No, I can't believe it. I mean, I can believe it after what I saw for the past 4 years. But and I'm worried that 4 years is not enough time to course correct.
So Saturday, I think it was you that wrote a column that Columbia said, hey, I'm going to hit all nine demands from the Trump administration. So we'd like our $400 million back. Then there was a conference call with Columbia saying 75-minute conference call, at which time I guess somebody was able to listen. And when professors expected concern that one of the Trump demands was taking the curriculum away from the Middle East, Near East, and Southeast professors, away from the department, and put it towards a provost or the president, they said, don't worry, that's not going to happen. You'll still be in control. That shows the duplicity behind the scenes, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, if faculty heard that, there would be riots on campuses because there's an idea of academic freedom. That faculty are in control of curriculum, not the administration. But I can tell you that at CUNY, that is not what's happening at Hunter College, where they have the most anti-Semitic curriculum, which we've been talking about. They passed the most anti-Semitic curriculum that I've seen in my years in right. education. And it was, I can tell you that I just got it from a very high-level source of mine, that it was the president herself, President Nancy Cantor. I like naming these people, Brian, you know that. Nancy Cantor at Hunter College, it was her idea for the Palestinian Studies program that calls Israel an apartheid, genocidal, settler colonial state, came from the administration. That is not how things work, and it's outrageous that they're doing that at Hunter College.
And what about the lawsuit the families are filing through an attorney saying that there was a link between these Palestinian groups and Hamas and the attacks?
Yeah, we talked about this a number of months ago, Brian, that I was telling you that I was hearing reports out of Middle East sources that the Hamas captors were telling hostages that we have operatives on U.S. campuses. And there were a few articles in Israeli outlets and in Jewish outlets. And Mark Goldfeder has brought a lawsuit on behalf of nine of these families of the hostages. And as I understand it, your watchers on Sunday are going to get quite a scoop because, according to Mark, he's got the receipts.
Lizzie Sobieski and Mark are going to come on. She just got back from Israel, where they had an anti-Semitic meeting, sat next to Prime Minister Netanyahu. She has been in the face of the pro-Palestinian protesters. She weighs about 110 pounds and is absolutely fearless and ferocious. And she thinks that finally it's not a matter of debate. Someone's financing this. And they come over here at these elite institutions, they get in, they pay full freight, and they create unrest and make people, not just Jewish kids, just make people who just looking to get education concerned that they're here for a different reason. I have no idea. We have to revisit the foreign aid from other countries. We have to revisit how many foreign students get in to these elite institutions at the expense of Americans.
Yeah, there's no question. It's exactly what Rubio said. We can't let these people in anymore. And a visa, a green card, that is a privilege, not a right. And we have to vet these people.
Cut 28.
The people that we're getting rid of in our country are vandalizing. They're not protesters. They're taking over college campuses. They're harassing fellow students. We let them in our country to study. We gave them a visa because they said, I want to go to your university. I want to get a degree. They didn't say, I want to go to university and I want to vandalize your library and I want to chase Jewish students down the street and I want to wear a mask over my face like if it's Halloween and terrorize people. We didn't give them a visa to do any of that.
Yeah, and that's what he's doing. And they say that it sent shockwaves. One of these who self-deported to Canada to avoid deportation says that when Khalil was arrested, it sent shockwaves through Colombia. And I love that.
I love that, too. It's not just Jews, Brian. It's Christians, too. And it's anyone who believes in Western values. That's the bottom line. If people think this is just Jews, they are sadly mistaken.
So there's the story out, which you're referring to, Jeff Lacks, is a federal lawsuit alleges that the leaders of the pro-Palestine student groups at Columbia had advanced knowledge of Hamas's October 7th attacks and responded in real time with a coordinated propaganda campaign designed to support and amplify the terror group's message on U.S. soil. At the center of the claim is an alleged protest toolkit that began circulating October 8th, one day after the Hamas attack, which plaintiffs argue must have been prepared beforehand. Also, Columbia has been at the center of the controversy, as you know. And then there's, why would you be posting things showing a map without Israel, just Palestine in the area, one country, on October 6th, unless you knew what was happening October 7th.
Yeah, and Brian, you got to ask Mark about this on Sunday. The Students for Justice in Palestine on the campus created their website, get this, 3 minutes before the Hamas attacks on October 7th. Before, 3 minutes before, not 3 minutes after.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing.
What does it tell you?
It tells you a lot. Get it from Mark directly.
Right. Well, so it looks sort of get that. But as this moves forward, you do the investigation. Hopefully it reveals some things. But where do you think the biggest problem is? Do you think it's the school needing the full tuition? Do you think it's foreign aid coming in and then in turn they want to influence the curriculum at these schools?
I think it's a combination of, like Marco said, lunatics who are running our campuses, which has to end. I mean, these people have to be vetted also. And like the Hunter president is a disaster. What she's doing is absolutely, completely outrageous. The chancellor of CUNY is outrageous. The head of Columbia, totally outrageous what they're doing over there. So, but yeah, of course it's the foreign funds accepting the money. I think Congress should act on that. I think there should be legislation that really addresses this issue of foreign funding and how it can be used.
And it's not just the anti-Semitism. I mean, you got the Russians, the Chinese really come over here, and that's really predominantly what they're doing. We still don't know why the Chinese illegal immigration to our country is up over 500%. It's slowed down now. They're forced to come to the northern border. I still don't know why that hasn't been effectively explained to me. Lastly, this is the last bite from Marco Rubio. Cut 29.
We don't want those people in our country. They're not demonstrating for. They're going beyond demonstration. They are going and they're creating a ruckus. They are creating riots, basically, on campus, and it's unfair for students. Some of these schools are some of the most expensive schools we have in America. People pay a lot of money to go to these schools. They borrow money to go to these schools, and you can't even go to class because some lunatic who's covering their face is running through campus, spray painting things, harassing people, and they're in my country as a guest. We want them out. Every one of them I find, we're going to kick them out.
I understand the sentiment, and he's got the power to do it. Let's see him start doing it in massive numbers, just like the border. When you send the message, you can end up in a El Salvadoran prison. They say it's not worth it. And my hope is a lot of these unrest that's happening on campuses, they know what they're about to do. But if they get caught, they're going to ask themselves, is it worth it? Where does this Khalil go? Back to Syria? I mean, that's where he's from.
Yeah.
Then he went to England for a while.
Yeah.
Go back to your country. That's where you send him out. I believe that the freedom of speech thing has got to be regulated when it comes to a student visa. Unless they say, hey, listen, I'm looking to protest. Don't really like America. Like to go to class there, but I'm going to be a problem. And then if we still let him in, it's our problem. But in my sense, it's Khalil didn't say that.
Well, and not only that, Columbia is a private campus. It's not a public ground. The free speech thing only is as good as Columbia allowing it to happen. If you had a normal administration there, they would say we're not allowing this on our campus, and free speech doesn't apply. They're not a government.
Yeah, thank you. Jeff Lacks, thanks so much. What's your next challenge, Jeff?
My next challenge, I don't know. There's so many things going on, but I think it's attacking the foreign funding, like you said, and I think it's helping the. I really think it's helping the FBI task force. If you have a connection to me for Leo Terrell, I can't get in touch with him, but I would like to work with him because I know stuff that nobody else knows.
Absolutely. I will provide that contact. Leo Terrell's in charge for the Justice Department of anti-Semitism.
That's amazing.
Jeff Lax, thanks so much. Stay safe.
Thank you, Brian. You too.
Your call's next, 1-866-408-7669.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade. The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, we are back. We'll be able to take some calls, 1-866-408-7669. Talking to Jeff, does a lot of great work right in New York City, the eye of the storm, basically working behind enemy lines. And there is so much anti-Semitism here. There's so much unrest, so many ungrateful immigrant students on visas or green cards. We're all getting to the bottom of it. I'm going to discuss that today, and we're going to have the show. We're going to put it on the show on Sunday at 10 o'clock on One Nation. Hope you guys will tune in. This is also, tomorrow is the day of rage, Saturday, for Tesla cars. As if they haven't done enough, anyone caught, and there have been guys caught, one of which had directed to Palestinian causes as well as communist causes. That was the one that I think blew up a Tesla dealership in Oregon. We're finding out who's behind all this. You're going to jail. And I'm wondering if John Cusack and then Congresswoman Crockett could be liable if people are hurt. Robert in Jacksonville, Florida. Hey, Robert.
Hey, look, I haven't heard anybody mention this, but these people that are blowing up the Tesla places, they're probably the same BLM people, the same anti-Palestine people. These people are just out there because they're anarchists.
I agree. I mean, they look the same.
Yeah, it's the same people. They just like creating havoc.
I think you're right, and I also think they're being paid.
Yes.
And they're being organized. So, and that's what's got to stop. And I tell you, Elon Musk has been very calm about it, but he says we are going to crack down. I'm going to treat it as terroristic threats. And it is. If you have that car and you're stopped at a light and you're in the wrong neighborhood, I guess an anti-Tesla neighborhood, you're going to be attacked.
Yeah, so, and these are supposedly the people that are also environmentalists.
Yeah, they're environmentalists who lauded the electric car. And they explained to me, too, that when you blow one up, the poisonous gases that come off it, it's very hard to put that fire out. So therefore, it is extremely dangerous. So when you go and do these attacks, and then number one, how many people aren't taking their car out of their garage because of this? How many are saying, I don't care about politics, but I can't have my kid, or I just bought her a Tesla, or I bought him a Tesla, he's 22 years old or 18, just got a car. I can't have him go to a Walmart. I'm afraid he's going to be in the parking lot. It's going to get blown up with him in it. I'm not going to do it. So Elon Musk said yesterday, I've been told by the President of the United States, we will prosecute this, and I think it's really important to do that. So we'll go ahead. I got other people writing me. Also, I was talking about the cursing for Democrats. Some of these people are writing me from BrianKilmeade.com, and the cursing, I don't get it. Yeah, people like Adam Schiff and Chuck Schumer and Congresswoman Crockett going out of their way to curse like they're eighth graders or maybe fourth graders who never used that word before. And they think that's what you guys want. If they want to win over and show they're fighting, they curse a lot. Have you ever heard of a bigger insult in your life but someone using profanity to win you over? Hey, don't forget, I'm coming to Dayton, Ohio. I know it seems far away, but it comes quick. June 21st, we already have half the place sold out. VIP opportunities available. History, liberty, and laughs. It's also promoted with Fox Nation, and you'll get specials for that great streaming service. Listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Keep it here.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show.
Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the show. So glad you've been with us all week long. One Nation, don't forget, Sunday night, 10 o'clock, big show coming your way. We're going to look at NIL, what it's done to college sports. We're going to look and talk to Kayleigh McEnany about the crack, crackdown on everything that's getting in his way. I'm talking about Donald Trump, as well as the latest on this anti-Semitism raging on college campuses and what Marco Rubio and company are doing to rid these campuses of that anti-American flavor while still making sure, to a degree, they have a freedom of speech as much as their visa/green card would allow. Kennedy at the bottom of the hour, Shannon Bream next. So let's get to the big three.
Number three.
And then we get a budget deal that Chuck Schumer helped design, and he had no plan for his own budget bill. And so the base has said, enough. Like, we want change.
Yep, there you go. Dems don't get it. More proof they are rudderless. And what's scarier is they don't seem to know it.
Number two.
Homeland Security, the FBI, ICE, and lots of folks from the U.S. Attorney's Office. We went to work, and they brought down one of the top MS-13 operatives in America.
Governor Glenn Youngkin, yesterday morning, took MS-13's leader, believe it or not, just 25 years old, and took him down. He's in prison. You got to see the arsenal they pulled out of there. And he was in a suburb in Virginia. We'll talk about the massive push on multiple fronts to rid our nation of ungrateful migrants, both legal and illegal.
Number one.
This is a revolution, and I think it might be the biggest revolution in government since the original revolution. America is going to be in much better shape. Critical programs that people depend upon will work. It's going to be a fantastic future.
I hope so, too. Elon Musk weighing in, and he brought seven people with him to explain what DOGE is actually up to. The men behind the movement will talk about their effort to make the government more efficient. Anyone who watched that, who wants to be a critic of that, will have. I would love to sit down and talk to him because they were so convincing and so sincere. There's not a political cell in their body that I could tell. But they're from Silicon Valley, where studies show and the stats reveal that most likely they're historically Democrat. Them should be embarrassed. They're not fighting along with this effort instead of fighting the effort. And people using expletives and blowing up Teslas because Elon Musk is trying to make government more efficient. It is one of the real baffling things about what we're going through right now. And also, we're talking about the crackdown. Hours ago, we sent out another 120 illegal immigrant criminals back to their home country. They left from El Paso. Shannon Bream joins us now. Shannon, exciting time. It started with the Signal app, and we ended with the MS-13, arrest.
Yeah, I mean, D.C. is a flood of information and news all day long. You got the vice president in Greenland today. You've got this case that involves the deportation of all the Venezuelan migrants now finally just formally landed with the Supreme Court. It's hard to keep up, Brian. Not going to lie.
Yeah, it's not. I hear you. But then last night, then when Brett sits down with the biggest story in Washington since Donald Trump won, and that's DOGE and the controversy, they tell everybody that they're just 20-year-old bros with nose rings and purple hair, and they don't know what they're doing, and they're arrogant. And then you see what we saw last night. You saw seven pros, three billionaires, just sitting down talking about what they found. Here's an example. Here's Elon talking with Anthony Armstrong about the databases. He's another expert on technology. Cut one.
The two systems are not talking to each other.
Yes.
Right? And so you don't know at the Small Business Administration that you're giving a loan to a 9-month-old, which happened in one case, because you're not cross-referencing that with the Social Security Administration data that has birth dates. If you just solve that simple problem, you would solve a huge amount of fraud.
Because the databases don't talk to each other, all they got was from Social Security is like, is this person alive? Yes. They're not alive. It's falsely marked. The person is falsely marked as alive in Social Security. That person, a fraudster, can now get unemployment and disability from a dead person.
So they do. That's what they're working on, Shannon. So what is the disconnect? What am I missing?
Well, I thought that was fascinating. There's more of it to come tonight. Just to hear from these guys that you talked about, I mean, these are super successful people who are doing this out of what they feel is their patriotic duty. They're not making a dime off of doing it. Our polling showed in the last week or two that people believe, 93% of them, that there's some level of government waste with every taxpayer dollar that is spent. But it also showed that people were wary of exactly how this was going down with DOGE. It's, you know, something that Democrats have got some traction with their messaging on this. Like, you know, they're cutting all these jobs and your Social Security check's going to disappear and all these terrible things are going to happen. But when they sat there last night and explained what they're doing and the sheer amount, their own shock at finding the level of waste and redundancy in agency after agency, I think it was really interesting to hear from them directly and a better explanation. And Elon saying, we're going to make mistakes. We've done that, but we can, because we're moving so quickly, also reverse those quickly.
So do you think they could have done a better job communicating early on? And the fact is, all we heard about was what was being caught and people being laid off. Mm-hmm. And they looked as though they were careless. But in reality, they hit us with a stat. Only 0.05% have lost their jobs.
Yeah, and that was something I asked Republicans about early on, too, because they were really celebrating, you know, the chainsaw optics with Elon. And I said, listen, when people start telling their stories and mainstream media starts, you know, covering these things and saying, you know, look at all these terrible things that are happening, do you guys worry that you're going to lose some of the public support that you have, which is really strong right now? Because I do think there's a lot of support for the idea of cutting waste and the idea of rooting out and being more transparent. But you got to worry about the optics on the other side of it, that you can overplay your hand on this. So I think that the administration, though, came in guns blazing. They had had 4 years to think about it, and they knew what they were up against this time. And Elon's commitment as this special envoy, or whatever the title is they're using for him, it's got a limited shelf life. And I think they just want to max it out, and they'll worry about where the dust settles later.
I guess so. And I want to get into judge shopping, but I first want to continue with this. Here's what Elon Musk talking about, and more of the people at Doge talking about what they were trying to accomplish with what they were doing. Here's Steve Davis talking about why he's doing this. And Steve Davis was a rocket scientist. Cut nine.
Some people say this shouldn't take a rocket scientist. Steve Davis, you are a rocket scientist.
Used to be.
Yeah, I do. And now essentially you're the chief operating officer of Doge. Day-to-day operations. Fair to say?
Part of the Doge team.
And he went on, cut 10.
So how did you end up here? What's the biggest challenge you see?
The reason I'm here, which is probably for many, is that I think the goal is incredibly inspiring. I think most of the taxpayers in the country would agree that in order to have the country going bankrupt would be a very bad thing, and therefore the country going not bankrupt is a good thing. That all of us are willing to kind of put our lives on hold in order to do. I think the thing that's special right now is we actually believe there's a chance to succeed, that there's an administration that's supportive and a great cabinet and just a great group that will actually make success a possible outcome. And I think that's, given the inspiring mission and given the non-zero chance of success, it was worth doing.
Right. And they're going to stay for about 6 weeks, 8 weeks through the summer, and then we'll see what happens. What do you think? So they came out and they had one person with Laura last Thursday. They got seven with Brett today. If they're going to continue to do this, I think they got to stay in charge. They thought the website would tell their story, mm-hmm. but the website lists what they found. But they mm-hmm. so far say they're saving $4 billion a day, and mm-hmm. they could get to $1 trillion. But it doesn't seem tangible. It seems anecdotal. How do they make the next step?
Yeah, I think you're right. They've got to work on the messaging, because they say this website is up and running, and sometimes you'll see postings on X, this is what we found today, this is what we did today. And I think when people see that and when we report on the specific examples of what's been found, that's where you get the reaction from people who are like, what? That's what my money was being used for? So I think the more that they can clearly communicate, the more it's going to benefit them in the long term. So the website's up and running, but I got some questions about that this morning too from somebody who is really skeptical about what's happening. Like, what's actually, what are they doing? Will there be a report to Congress? Well, what they've been saying is, we're cutting in real time. There's not going to be a report. This is not going to be like Simpson Bowles, where we say, oh, here are our suggestions, and they may or may not get done. Elon says we're doing it in real time. So that is the transparency. That's the messaging. But I think, you know, there's an agreement there that people need to understand more about what's going on before they're going to have a total comfort level with it.
So now we find out that there's got to be an investigation into Signal, how it took place. We know about the chat room that took place, about the Houthi rebel attack. We got it. We don't need to hear any more from Peter Goldberg. But there's going to be an investigation. It turns out, Shannon, the investigation will be run by, drumroll please, the same judge that decided that you can't transport, you can't transport TDA and MS-13 to El Salvador. It's been holding it up for 2 weeks and has been giving the administration a hard time. They said it's a totally random situation. Mm-hmm. Can you blame people who doubt that?
Yes, I understand that people, you know, they see that and they're thinking, my goodness, how does this guy land another one of these when, you know, it seems like he's not supportive, might be hostile to some of these Trump policies. But I got to remind people, the federal courts do have a random system that they have to, the chief judge of every district has to oversee this stuff. And remember, down in Florida, it actually worked really well in President Trump's favor when Judge Eileen Cannon got assigned to what was going on with the Mar-a-Lago documents case down there. And the left was really angry, like, how in the world did she get assigned? So, you know, sometimes the luck of the draw is good or bad for you. But these federal judges, it's done by a random process. And right now for the Trump team, landing with Boasberg again is not where they would want to be in these D.C. cases.
Right. Even though he was appointed by H.W. Bush and he was promoted by Obama, it mm-hmm. seems that he has a hard time with the way Trump's doing things.
Mm-hmm.
So do you think that they anticipated this type of lawfare / judge fair?
Mm-hmm. I do, because, listen, they came in, like I said, with a list of everything that they were going to do with these hundreds of executive orders. They knew that they would almost immediately be drawn into court. Some of them, I think that they've actually done some of these policies or ideas that are considered provocative because they want a judicial ruling on them. They want a court to say yes or no, you can't do this, and they feel good in the long term. They knew short term you're going to hit a brick wall with these nationwide injunctions where one of the hundreds of federal judges out there can actually shut down a policy nationwide. They want not only the merits of their cases decided, but they want that policy decided too. Can one judge do all of this? So I think that they've done a lot of things knowing it was going to provoke these legal fights. But now you've got four of them sitting at the Supreme Court, and I expect more to get there too.
Shannon, what do you have this weekend?
We have got Byron Donalds launching his gubernatorial run in Florida. We're going to talk to him about these two special races next week, these Florida House races, and this position that Republicans are in on the Hill, having to, you know, withdraw Lee Stefanik's U.N. ambassador nomination. We're going to talk with him. We've got Senator Mark Warner, Democrat, top Democrat on the Senate Intel Committee, big critic of this whole Signalgate thing, too, but I don't think he's exempt from using it. So what are the guardrails? You know, it's used all over Capitol Hill, including him, including other senators. And we've got this Wisconsin Supreme Court race that's happening next week. Why has it turned into this big national thing? One of the judges has agreed to come on with us. We invited both, but you're going to hear from them about why that is such an important race.
Yes, it could be the balance of power as they decide about where the next congressional races will be, which could mm-hmm. decide the balance of power in the House.
Yeah.
Because you can't lose one. That's why at least Stefanik's been asked to step out as mm-hmm. UN ambassador candidate and now goes back to her New York seat. What does that tell you, Shannon?
Well, it tells you Republicans are a little worried. You remember just a few days ago, there was this state seat in Pennsylvania that was in a district that had not gone red since hadn't gone blue since the 1800s, and they flipped a seat there. So there's real concern that there's backlash that, you know, after this enormous win by President Trump and the Republicans in November, they're really worried about these special elections and they don't want to take any chances. Listen, even if Stefanik went over to become ambassador, there was no problem with that. She had the support. It was happening. But, you know, Governor Kathy Hochul had talked about keeping that seat open, not even that they thought they were going to lose the election potentially, but that it would just sit open for months. Republicans cannot afford to lose that vote. And there, you know, there's some concern about one of the two House seats in Florida that may be in play too.
And that one of those seats is the Waltz seat. Randy Fine, who mm-hmm. seems to run a remarkably bad race.
Yeah, and you've even got Republicans saying that publicly, like, listen, this is about the guy. He's being way out fundraised. They don't think he's gotten serious about this soon enough. Will it be enough? Can he close strong? But that is a very red district. It's, you know, the Waltz district. They shouldn't have to be worried about it, but they are.
Incredible. Shannon, we're going to be watching. You're doing an incredible job on Fox News Sunday.
Thank you, my friend.
And you'll see multiple times airings on if I do miss it, I do catch it at 3 a.m.
Okay, but I'll see you on Sunday night.
Yes, at 10:00. It's going to be fun.
Can't wait. Dance party.
All right. Absolutely, Shannon. Stay within yourself. Promise me.
Okay, bye.
All right. 1-866-408-7669. Bottom of the hour, Kennedy will be joining us. And then, of course, we'll continue to talk about what we accomplished and what we learned from Doge last night. You're listening to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Breaking news, the latest headlines, exciting commentary.
People are aroused. I haven't seen people so aroused in a very, very long time.
It's Brian Kilmeade. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
And it turns out there is actually a mine in Pennsylvania that houses every paper document for the retirement process in the government. Now picture this. This giant cave has 22,000 filing cabinets stacked 10 high to house 400 million pieces of paper. It's a process that started in the 1950s and largely hasn't changed in the last 70 years. And so as he dug into it, we found retirement cases that had so much paper, they had to fit it on a shipping pallet. So the process takes many months, and we're going to make it just many days.
That's it. They're trying to make it easier. They're not cutting people's Social Security. Don't let anyone tell you they're doing that. They're trying to get out fraud. And he went on to say that 40% of the calls to Social Security were people asking for it to change their direct deposit to banking information. 40% were fraudsters just trying to get your Social Security. So that's what they're doing. And it just, if you are worried about it and open-minded, if you're a Democrat, just watch. It's online. Click on Special Report. Part two is tonight. By the time you're done watching it, I challenge you to say they're not working on our behalf to make things better in a way we didn't think were imaginable. Tom, listen on WABC in Briarcliff, New York. Tom.
Hey, Brian, how you doing? I just want to make a point. I heard Shannon, you know, talk about the Doge, that the optics, you know, could be bad, which is true. But I think what's being left out is, you know, the economic effect also. You know, you had a government under Biden that was, you know, a lot of money came from government spending. A lot of the growth in the economy was generating. But you're going to, if you cut $1 trillion out of Doge, which I think is the right thing to do because, you know, deficit spending by the government is inflationary. So if you do, I mean, that's about a 3.5% hit to GDP, and that also has a multiplier effect. So I think what you're, you know, what they're not doing is they're not, you have a timing issue. If you make those cuts now before the private sector is able to kind of make up for that loss, you know, you could have a slowdown in the economy. And I think, you know, you saw that today. Again, the consumer sentiment numbers were lower. So, you know, one man's fraud and waste is another man's income. And I don't think so.
I mean, for example, if you lose your job, if you're one of the 10,000 going to lose your job at HHS, it's very similar when you go through a company and you realize, and when you buy a company and you realize the workforce got fat and lazy and there's duplicative jobs, you got to move on. And other people are going to take a package and they're going to leave. But ultimately, they're going to be a leaner, better, a more efficient organization. What I got last night were computers that are 50 years old who weren't talking to each other. We had software experts who think they can come up with a better system. We have people that don't want to modernize. And we're also making people go back to work. A lot of the people that left just didn't want to go back to the office. So they're unleasing these buildings, if that's a word. And they're moving on. Listen, we'll take some calls. Also, Kennedy's coming in next. Same Kennedy's been starring on Gutfeld all week long.
He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
I'm doing it because, first of all, it was presented as maybe this is a beginning to heal America. No, I don't have some sort of complex where I think I can heal America. I can't. Okay, let's get that clear. I'm not going to be healing America. But if two guys who've been at each other for so long, I mean, it's kind of a Nixon to China thing. I have the credential. There was nobody who was harder on Trump or more prescient about the fact that he wasn't going to leave office voluntarily than I was. I feel like I have the credentials. But they also respect me because I'm honest about the woke train to crazy town. And I don't shrink from that. And I've also lost a lot of fans for that. The woke people have left the building and I'm willing to make that sacrifice. But it does give you a certain credibility.
I agree. Bill Maher is going to the White House on Monday, and he's going because Kid Rock is friends with both of them. He said, how would you like to go see the president? He goes, I would do it. He goes, I'll make it happen. President said, let's do it. They're going to make it happen on Monday. Kid Rock's going to come on with us on Tuesday on Fox and Friends. But more importantly, Kennedy is here now.
That's right.
It's so rude for me to talk about other people in front of you.
I've got the credibility to be here, Brian.
Right. That's all I care about. You're not in that woke mania. You're not woke anymore, right?
I don't know that I ever was.
True. I'm thinking of somebody else. My fault. Your thoughts.
You're thinking of Douglas Kennedy, who also works here.
Right.
Yeah.
Once in a while. When he can.
Very busy.
Right.
Always on assignment.
Right. It's true. And most of his big stories. Kennedy, for you, your thoughts about Bill Maher going to the White House?
At some point, maybe in 2016 or 2017, this would have been big news. Everyone's been there. You know, it's like Mark Zuckerberg went to the White House. I think he's got a little bit more sway, realistically, than Bill Maher. I honestly think, and I've known Bill Maher for a long time. I was on one of his very first shows in 1993 and was a regular on Politically Incorrect when it was on Comedy Central and ABC. I was only on his HBO show once, and I made him so mad that I called his executive producer, Scott Carter, and said, hey, I want to come on. I've got a book coming out. And he said, Bill, we'll never have you on again.
What'd you do?
I challenged him about atheism. And it made his audience very mad, and it made him very mad. But at the time, like, he was a raging atheist progressive. And I called BS, and he thought that I talked too much. You're wearing an IFB. His producer could have said, hey, let someone else jump in here. They didn't. And I think, you know, he's just being very opportunistic. A lot of people went to Mar-a-Lago after the election when he won. I think Bill Maher has lost a big part of his audience, and he wants the Joe Rogan audience. He wants the Brodians. And, you know, it's like maybe some people will see him as a straight shooter. And, you know, I think he will be deeply charmed by the president. And I think that he has tried for a long time to tear him down, as the New York Times did and CNN and MSNBC have. And it didn't work. So, you know, I guess that's how you survive, is you do a political 180 and pretend that, you know, you're really doing it instead of, like, desperately trying to claw back market share. You're doing it because you are so true to heart.
Everything you said was right, especially this stuff about you, right? Because
I believe you are. True.
I had a first-person experience. Right.
So.
I don't need a second source. Although, Allison, if you would work on one, somebody else on the panel. But
Mario Batali was on that show, and Martin Bashir.
Martin Bashir
has since been completely discredited. He was the one who interviewed Princess Diana and completely lied to her and forged all those documents that she was being spied upon.
Yes.
And then he also did the Michael Jackson documentary, where Michael Jackson was holding hands with a very young adolescent. And the producers looked at this and like, bro, you need to press him on this. Like, you are way too friendly. We may have, you know, some illegal activity here. And so Bashir had to go back. And that's when he like, his journalistic instincts completely failed him in the moment. So he had to go back and shoot another interview. And he was like, Michael, are you a pedophile? Or he's like, pedophile. But he has since totally been discredited because of the Princess Diana stuff. So he was on with Bill Maher when I was there.
So the difference between with Bill Maher and Scarborough, for example, they just ripped him every day. I mean, they were just more outraged every day. I'm busy at that time, but I watch clips back, and Allison will tell me, he's like, you know, I know you don't, you know, watch the morning show, but they're going crazy on Trump on X, Y, every day.
Yeah.
Not even like, well, he's doing
this
right.
Part of the strategy, but Maher was part of that strategy too.
But I would say this. So they would come out. Then all of a sudden, one day he goes, yeah, we told him, let's start fresh. He's the devil. He's Nazi. He's going to destroy America.
He's worse. He's worse than Hitler.
But I was watching Bill Maher. You know him much better than I do. I never watched Politically Incorrect. But I was just watching, and I'm saying to myself, out of all the left-wing shows, I'm like, why? I could use that monologue on this show. Okay. Well, that's kind of cool. I heard about that. And Trump's making sense here. And he was one of the first on the left to stay on the left and say, indicates like, well, this makes sense. Well, that's wrong. And I thought it was interesting because he was doing it to the face of his liberal pundits,
yes,
or whatever they call panelists. So I do think this is interesting in that he pointed out a lot of the things that was bothering him, is that the politically incorrect stuff left a lot of people behind. including the green mania that happened. He's like, really? We have on the West Coast, this is working for us. This is working for us with gas prices so high and taxes so high and these and all the stuff that you and I talk
and
about.
Utility and you prices live out went there. Up. Yeah.
So I thought that he was he's I always took it as more sincere, but I don't know him personally.
I don't think it's insincere. I just don't think he's as much of a hero as he's painting himself. And, you know,
I think
he'll
really, really, Trump.
Really wanted to be liked by the left for a long time. And he didn't start out that way. He definitely started out more libertarian and then drifted left when progressivism made purchase and became more popular. And, you know, he wanted to be adored. He has a massive ego. I mean, I guess you know what that's like, Brian.
You're talking about
because... You're a media titan and you broadcast 6 hours a day. I mean, you're impossible to be around, but...
Talking about me? That really hurts. I mean, now we have something for the promo.
You're a wonderful mentor now and one of the easiest going people in the building.
How about this, Kennedy? Now I'm going to ban you from my show, too. That's two shows. You can call Allison all you want. Sorry, never again. She talks Damn way I. too much. Talks way too much. She's got way too many opinions. Oh, and by the way, don't believe in God. How about that? Now take me on. No, I don't say that. I don't believe in God. I just don't believe that God is doing the play-by-play. Did you download the app?
Which app? Hallow?
Yeah.
The Mark Wahlberg app?
Yes.
I know Mark Wahlberg from when he was Marky Mark and talked about his fourth
With no
nipple.
Shirt on?
Yeah. I have my own relationship with God. We have a good thing going.
But does God want you to have that app?
God wants me to be in a constant state of prayer and meditation,
right.
Which is a difficult thing, and I have to constantly work on it. So I'm going to work on that before I download anything.
Right. And I would say this.
But I don't fault people who do.
Download the app.
Absolutely not.
Right.
Like, if it gets you closer to God, if it makes you feel better, if it gives you a sense of well-being, then absolutely download the app.
To pray
are
with
they,
a, do
are you they think, sponsored
of do you
the
think
show?
There's a Do you think there's a chance that yes. God listens if you do it with a celebrity? Like if you pray alone with a celebrity.
Yes, especially a celebrity child.
Right. What do you mean? You mean Gary Coleman? How do you lived? Like, what do you mean celebrity child?
Like someone who is a child and a celebrity, like right now.
Right.
Like there's only a narrow window because God listens to the prayers of children. I believe that. Absolutely. But God really listens to the prayers of famous children.
Who sang about that? Is there a song like that?
I don't know.
Let the Whitney Houston.
I believe the children are the future.
Yeah.
Teach them well and let them lead the way. Show
yes.
them all the beauty they possess inside.
So you don't know what I talk about? You don't know what I'm talking about?
Is no what idea. But she doesn't say, God listens to prayers of children. Their tiny voices, they inspire him. I don't remember that verse.
I don't even know what you're saying. Mm. But I tell you, if I was.
A lot of people say I'm the voice of an angel, Brian.
Right? Can you name them? Can you name any of those
people? There are
people?
Too many to name.
Okay, fine.
Too many names.
Very good. That's like Trump when asked about the Bible. Favorite passage? Like them all? Like them all. Favorite. Why discriminate?
That's amazing.
Favorite part
Two
of the Bible.
2 Corinthians, right? 2 Corinthians.
Right.
2 Corinthians walk into a bar.
By the way, I'm going to stop before we get in trouble.
I thought we already were.
So... I find it very interesting. There's people like Bill Maher and Senator Fetterman who obviously realize the Democratic message is broken. Governor Newsom perhaps feels the same way. That's why he has the ridiculous podcast that he's having right now instead of running his state.
Can I tell you what's happening in California? I have not heard back from my insurance adjuster. My house is so damaged. Like, there are people who have completely cleaned out their lots whose homes burned down. And those of us who have damaged homes, like... The EPA won't clean our yards. The Army Corps of Engineers, won't touch what we have. And now I've been ghosted by Geico. My insurance adjuster will no longer get back to me. And it's like, what's the point of having insurance? A lot of people are in that boat. So why isn't the governor tackling that? Why aren't they figuring out the myriad needs of people whose homes and lives and towns have been decimated? Why are you doing a podcast? It keeps me up at night. Like Karen Bass and Gavin Newsom are so bad at their jobs.
It's unbelievable.
I was talking to a neighbor of mine today whose house burned down. She's still in tears. Like she is so... Emotionally
Does she
traumatized
have insurance?
By this. yes, she got dropped by State Farm,
but
they have to cover it because the coverage doesn't end until Monday.
So Jake Steinfeld was here too, lost everything. And he had
Body by Jake?
Yeah.
Love that guy.
And he said, oh, he's a great guy. He came out and he said, you know what? He said, I have great insurance. The good thing is I have great insurance. And then the story totally changed. He says, people without insurance are actually getting better treatment as opposed to the people with insurance.
Yeah.
Because they're getting
I think the insurance companies, they just realize like, oh, we're just going to stop calling people back.
Right.
And it's like, that's not okay. I have a small pool. It is a toxic waste site. I mean, it was espresso black during the fires because of all the smoke, debris, ash, soot, and lead. And now it has turned bright green because of the algae and God knows what else. And there were two ducks in my pool the other day. And I sent the picture to my daughter. She's like, get them out of the pool. They're going to die. And I'm like, they're ducks. They fly. I can't.
Right. And they didn't put their head in, did they?
I held their heads underwater to teach them a lesson.
This is so wrong. So I've got my original point. Oh, my original point, something much less important. By the way, with Sandy, same thing. Got 3 feet of water. If you might as well have 10 feet, it doesn't matter. It's all ruined. You got to cut the sheetrock out. You got to get rid of the floors because it's all going to buckle. So this is fire. I was, what town are you in? What city?
Pacific Palisades.
Pacific Palisades. Okay, the worst. So
everything around me.
When he showed up, when Gavin Newsom showed up and says, yeah, I'm angry too. Why wasn't there water here? Yeah. Why was the reservoir filled? What do you mean you're angry? Nice try. It's your state.
You're the governor.
Yeah, you're the governor, you idiot. And then the mayor, I'm going to get the person who told me to go to Ghana is in trouble.
Yeah, it's so, like the person was you.
Yes.
Like at some point you have
Can you
agency.
Get her a mirror? Yes. So here's what Tim Walz said about what went wrong. I feel like this is such a bad point now. You made so many good personal points. And if I go back to politics.
I'm very brave to be here, Brian. Don't you understand?
Okay, fine. Should I do this anyway?
Yeah, do it. Go ahead.
All right. So I'm just for the record, your personal struggle, much bigger story than politics. Just want to make that.
Well, I mean, my struggle is insignificant compared to the struggle of people I know who have lost everything, who have no help.
But what I'm trying to say is I'm about to do politics now. It makes me look insensitive.
Let's do it. Let's make a right turn.
So here we go. So do Democrats learn their lesson? Cut 34.
We let them define the issue on DEI, and we let them define what woke is. We got ourselves in this mess because we weren't bold enough to stand up and say, you damn right we're proud of these policies. We're going to put them in, and we're going to execute them.
Okay. Have you ever seen a guy with worse instincts than Governor Tim Walz? He says DEI works, we're just not good at defining it.
I mean, Joe Biden was pretty bad.
Right.
Joe Biden was void of many political instincts. Tim Walz is horrible. He should not be a part of the national conversation. Every time he opens his mouth, it's a new punchline and a new meme.
But he doesn't know it.
But he is, and I think the only reason, it's like giving Dan Quayle a spelling bee.
Right.
You know, it's like the only reason people put him on stage is so he can say something stupid and they can laugh about it. It was like they used to have Hillary speak everywhere just to ask her about the 2016 election loss because she'd have a meltdown and it was so much fun to watch.
Right. She has an editorial out today. Hillary Clinton, how much dumber will this get? And puts down the current administration.
Benghazi, Hillary.
Right.
Benghazi.
How did she do with Russia relations? How did that go?
The reset button?
Yeah, that went well.
Ask Sergey Lavrov.
Right.
Who's now laughing in hell.
You could roll with anything. But it's a bit of a challenge. Because I feel like it's impossible to go to break with you. Because I feel like I left something on the table. But I have to do it anyway.
Are we still on the air?
Stand back. Back in a moment.
In-depth analysis. Insightful commentary. Probing questions.
What's a furry again?
I'll tell you.
Thinks they're an animal?
Sure.
It's Brian Kilmeade. Information you want, truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show, sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen, made for your brain.
Well, now you got to say something smart because Prevagen is actually...
That's Electric Love by Bourne's. That's true.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Because you used to be a DJ.
That's correct.
That's your true love. If you could give all this talk, this spoken word thing down, would you go back to music?
No, I love the balance of music and politics.
Yeah.
It's like chocolate and peanut butter.
Like, would you do a show where you do one interview and then one band?
That'd be amazing.
Right?
Yeah.
Like The Who. There's no new bands.
There are a lot of new bands.
Really?
You'd be surprised. Sure. There aren't as many rock bands. There aren't as many like four-piece rock bands because so many people make their own music because music editing and beat creation are so incredibly cheap and accessible now. So a lot of people just do that.
Warren Zeiders has become this huge country music star. He had no career until the pandemic, and he published his own music. He put it online.
Yeah.
And he became famous. His sister said, you got to put this online. And within 3 years, he had more followers. Now he's this big star. Is that crazy?
Well, it's
the
like
people,
Oliver
like the Beatles
Anthony.
That played over you.
Yeah.
Oliver Anthony. Oh, no. Yeah. What happened to him?
He badmouthed Fox. And then his career just died.
Did he badmouth Fox?
Yes, he did.
Wow.
Yeah. I was,
okay. Thank you. Yeah, because like, we used him. I
came
remember,
by.
We tried to help him.
Yeah.
No, I didn't know.
Yeah, he would have been a legend for a decade.
So you could tell me who's on Jimmy's show.
On
Saturday night.
Mm-hmm.
When are you going to tell me?
Steve Hilton's going to be on.
That's all that counts.
I love Steve Hilton.
And you're on.
Yeah.
All right. And Jimmy.
That's right.
All right.
I don't know who else.
Most reluctant promo ever. So 10 o'clock Sunday.
It's going to be amazing.
Right. Thank you. Well, that helps. And I'm going to do a thing on NIL. It's Change College Sports Forever in the middle of March Madness.
Oh, fantastic.
A leading lawyer who was there at the very beginning, part of going to see a 17-year-old saying, here's $1 million to go to XYZ University. He's going to make that sense. And then we got Kayleigh McEnany. We tackle anti-Semitism at Columbia with a lawyer representing 9 families that proves that these protesters have direct links to Hamas. So
oh, they do.
It's going to be huge.
I mean, I was talking to an international private security contractor, and they follow all of the Signal conversations that the Hamas people have with the pro-Palestine college protest groups, and they are disseminating Hamas talking points. That's
right.
All I will tell you.
I only read articles that Jeff Goldberg follows from Signal. So that's the only thing I can. By the way, that's not going to be a big story.
What a
just
patriot.
Let it go.
Yeah,
let's just go. Kennedy, it was good to see you. I wish you felt the same way.
But it was
just
amazing
don't.
To have me.
Yeah. Yes, there's the ego. I thought I had an ego, but we end with your ego.
On the latest episode of the Fox Nation Investigates podcast, Evil Next Door, female serial killer Eileen Wuornos, a Florida-bound hitchhiking prostitute, rose to infamy after killing 7 men. Listen and follow now at foxtruecrime.com.
Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.